LUBE stands for Leather Uniform Bear Encounter.
A year ago this month, a trailer was released on Vimeo for the annual Folsom Street Fair in San Francisco. For those out there who have never been or have never heard of it, the Folsom Street Fair is the world's largest BDSM and leather event. People travel from all over the globe to participate in or watch the multitudes of debauched activities on display, all in beautiful broad daylight across several blocks of Folsom Street. Given the fair's over 30-year history and the fact that it's based in the world's technology capital, I probably shouldn't have been surprised that a trailer would be released in the run-up to the event, but I was, and it was magical. In the style of a Bob Fosse-esque musical, mustachioed leather-clad muscle men sway and snap their fingers, bare asses are spanked in time with the music, women dressed as show ponies prance while bears in chest harnesses shimmy. It's a glorious kinky kaleidoscope of people of every race, gender, and size. Its final shot, originally focused on one man, slowly pulls out to reveal the entire cast joyously writhing and moaning in a big pile on the floor. The music ends, but the moans continue as the credits roll. To me, this 5-minute short film was the moment that leather and kink went mainstream. Never mind the 50 Shades of Grey books. This marked the first time I saw something so beautifully deviant and slickly produced come directly from those communities and reach a mainstream audience in a way that was fun and raunchy, but also playful and inviting to those currently outside the community. But how did we get to this point? I'm Shauna Scott, and this is our Sexual History Podcast, where we talk about sex and history and more sex. Today I'm hanging out with Dr. Connor Von Buggy, a UCD lecturer and pillar of Dublin's leather community. We're going to talk about the history of the leather community here in Dublin and worldwide. And just for all of you out there, I understand that the leather community is a massive umbrella with tons of different kinds of people in it. But just for, because we only have 20 to 30 minutes on this show, we're just going to talk about the gay male leather community. Connor, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for asking me.
So let's start at the beginning. Where did the leather community come from?
Oh my God. Well, there's lots of ideas about what was the original kind of concept. But I think really you have to look at the US kind of in the late 1940s, early 1950s. Kind of after World War II, biker culture became quite a thing, especially in the early 1950s.
Yeah.
And a lot of gay men began to become attributed with that grouping, almost as a, not as a backlash against the kind of more effeminate gay culture, but they wanted to be seen as more masculine, and they thought that this kind of culture was much more masculine. So we had a lot. So that's kind of really how it started.
So it was kind of almost like a pushback against stereotypes almost.
Almost, exactly. And in doing so, they eventually became a stereotype, which is kind of interesting. But so kind of it started that way. So it really was biker culture, which is where it started. And it was exactly the same way in Europe. I mean, in Los Angeles, I think it was like the mid-1950s, the very first gay biker club started. Yeah. I'm trying to think of their name. I think Satires or something like that, I think they're called. And then there was biker clubs in San Francisco. And then in the 1950s, again, biker clubs appeared in Berlin and in Amsterdam. So it kind of began to spread from the 1950s onwards. And
because when I think of that time period, I think of like these big kind of gay icons like Marlon Brando and James Dean and like the really tight jeans and like leather chaps and everything. Like yeah. It really was kind of like almost cinematic.
Very much so. And it also then became almost like a stylized and associated with gay culture. It became almost like something that people began to emulate the gay culture and brought it into the more heterosexual mainstream. So you saw imitation. Originally, the gay men imitated the straight guys, and then the straight guy began to imitate the gay guys to kind of bring it back around. So it was like full circle. So it really did start with biker culture. And here in Europe, for example, the actual collective grouping of gay fetish clubs is called ECMC, which is the European Confederation of Motorcycle Clubs. Now, very few of us actually ever get on a bike, but it's that's kind of how it all began.
And do you think these things, like these groups, sprung up independently of each other and just had the same kind of idea? Or was the European, was that kind of in response to the American, like, biker clubs and things?
I think it's just, even back then, you know, even without the internet, you know, word traveled.
Yeah.
And it became kind of more prominent. There was, I believe I think it was like the late 1950s, there was a famous riot that involved gay leather men. I can't remember the name of it now, but that appeared in international news. There was also some articles in Time magazine in the 1950s about a nightclub in San Francisco that called The Toolbox, that became much more widely known about this subculture.
I think I read about this this Time magazine article. It was like the first time kind of any LGBT issues were put in like a mainstream magazine.
Yeah. I can't remember when it was, but I think it was the 1950s. It was before Stonewall.
Yeah.
Kind of a watershed moment for our subculture. We still call it a subculture. I know you said it's become mainstream earlier, but to me it'll always be considered a subculture, is that it was the Stonewall riots. So the one thing that we always say, and the one thing is the drag community and the leather community get on very well. We're the ones who started the Stonewall riots. The Stonewall riots were started by drag queens and leather men, and we've been very good partners ever since. And that then gained even more kind of international notoriety for that. So it started in America and then progressed worldwide. I mean, you've got leather clubs all over the world, really. I mean, in Australia has quite a few. There's one in New Zealand. Then Europe has quite a lot. Canada, all across the US. I believe there's even one in Chile in South America.
There's one in Seattle, where I'm from, called the Eagle, which I was not allowed in because it was like a very particular night that I was not allowed in.
Some nights it's men only.
I was very disappointed.
It's mixed. But the eagle is itself is a name that's synonymous with this culture. There's a lot of bars named the Eagle. So you have the Eagle New York, the Eagle in Washington DC, the Eagle in Seattle, there's even an Eagle in London. So this name is a synonymous bar name for our subculture.
Okay, so by the 1960s, San Francisco has really established itself as the LGBT capital of the world. And by the 1980s, like, the Folsom Street Fair has started. But where was Ireland in all this? Like, what was going on in the culture?
Well, in Ireland, I think before I even get to Ireland, we maybe just talk about Europe. Europe, it was very much underground and it wasn't as public as it was in America. But Berlin and Amsterdam led the way in making it much more accessible and much more open. So I think it was 1975 or 76 when the first Leathermen Berlin at Easter festival happened, and that still continues on to this day. There is still a very big leather festival at Easter in Berlin, and then actually in recent years, I think from about 2004 onwards, I think we've had Folsom in Berlin, which is held in the first weekend of September, the first or second weekend of September each year, and that's really, really massive. So you're in Europe, those two cities led the way from like the 1970s onwards. But here in Ireland, it was non-existent really until the 1990s. I mean, yes, it existed. There were men who were into leather and fetish, but there was no way it was going to be exposed significantly on the scene in Dublin. I mean, very rarely you would come across a gay leather man on the scene in Dublin. And then in the 1990s, there was one or two randomly held fetish events, which were very, like, across all fetishes. There, you know, it was rubber, latex, leather, bondage, the whole lot.
Yeah.
I think actually Rory O'Neill set up one of the first ones, Panty, that was called Gag. That was in the early 1990s.
Yeah, I remember going to a talk where he was like talking about everything that went on. It sounded like great crack, but at the same time, I was just like, holy
crap. It was.
Crap.
Even today, I think if Gag was hell, some of the things that got on Gag were very notorious. I think some of his painting work, shall we say,
yes,
has gone down quite infamously. But kind of then in the late 1990s and early 2000s, there was a few activists here in Dublin in particular who were very heavily involved in the fetish scene in Europe, and then they brought it to Ireland. So, for example, Carl Hayden, I think a lot of people know about Carl. He's been ubiquitous with activism in Ireland since the 1990s onwards. Carl helped organise a few different events for gay men that had a fetish focus, whether it was skinhead or leather or rubber. And then also you have Joe Harnett, who came back from Chicago in the 1990s and set up a group which eventually became Lube. It was called L-U-B-E.
That is a fantastic name.
I know. And I have friends who were involved in that. And I think I managed to attend one event when I was in my very early 20s before Lube kind of faded into the background. Lube stands for Leather Uniform Bear Encounter. And Joe, in particular, he basically put an ad out into, I think, GCN asking, could anybody interested in leather meet up in Outhouse? And that kind of took place in the early 2000s. And Joe himself then went on to be the first Irish man to participate in International Mr. Leather in Chicago a few years later. And then that then brought some prominence into our community. And so Lou went on for a few years. And then kind of, I think it was about 2008 or so, I can't remember the exact years, but we had another group called Rule, which was, oh my God, what was that? What did that stand for? Rubber Uniform Leather Encounter, I think, possibly. And that was, that group went for quite a while. And it, you know, was, it was kind of met relatively regularly on a kind of like a 3-monthly basis, and that ran for about 2 years. And we also had another one that was held down in the basement in Pantybar back when it was called Gooboo. And I don't, that was called Dress Code. My God, I'm trying to remember all these names. And Dress Code ran as well periodically in the basement in Gooboo for you know, a year or two. And then it kind of everything kind of faded away, and nothing was taking place in Dublin, let alone the rest of the country. And you know, so a lot of people would go to Berlin. So, you know, if you wanted to experience, to wear your leathers out and experience fetish, you didn't stay in Dublin.
And I suppose like Berlin or like London or Amsterdam, those would be the kind of big,
yes,
capitals of Europe.
Exactly. So you would, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, you'd pack up your leather gear and you'd go for a long weekend to one of those cities and hang out there. And, you know, it used to happen where, I remember it was the early, you know, from about 2009 onwards, you know, there was like 3 or 4 weekends a year in Berlin where you'd go and you'd meet nothing but Irish men in Berlin. You'd be kind of going, what's going on? And you'd go there and you'd be kind of going, but okay, so we have a critical mass. There's a critical mass of men.
Yeah.
And that we all go to Berlin and we all go there together and we all interact with each other together. So why can't we have an event in Ireland? And one of my good friends, Eamon Redmond, he took it upon himself to see, okay, let's see if we can find a venue. And then some more of our friends got together and basically we decided to hold a night and we called it Geared Ireland. And that was in 2013. And since then, basically, we found a venue that supported us. And so Geared Ireland has been the longest running leather and fetish gay group in the country. And we hold events pretty much once a month, whether it's a full club night or whether it's just going out on the town in our gear in the city. And, you know, so we've basically been the apex of the community and the most visible aspect of the community here in Ireland for the last 3 years. And we're now becoming part, we are a member of the European Confederation of Motorcycle Clubs. So we're part of the bigger European network. And, you know, we are continuously trying to have different types of events. Many, you know, we have bondage workshops, we have sales of gear where we sell our secondhand gear to get new people into it. And, you know, so while we might only, you know, we're not an actual physical place. We are a club and we've got a decent membership and, you know, we take part in Pride and we always get a great reception at the Pride March. And it's good to be more visible in the community and to actually be seen a lot more than the way it was previously.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've known you guys for about a year, and even one of the guys I worked on the Yes Equality campaign with was a geared guy. And then at Pride last year, he was like, come hang out with my crowd. And so we went and had drinks with you guys. And it was just, it felt like such a tight-knit community. And very, very supportive. And like, the more I got to know you guys, like, it just, like, I love seeing the updates on Facebook, even though like, I'm not involved in the club nights. I really love seeing that you guys are doing like Christmas parties and like doing the geared sales and stuff, and like, and being really inviting to newbies, which I think is just like so important, because it's one thing that like I love pushing the issue on, is that like we need to be talking more openly mm-hmm. about like sex and sexuality and just being a friendly face to that. And I think you guys have done that so incredibly well.
One of the things, I think because we were a group of friends to start out with,
yeah,
that it just kind of steamrolled from there. And, you know, we're a core little group that run it, but we have a huge amount of regulars that turn up, and we're all, you know, we all get on great. It's essentially a social night, and it's for people to meet people and to then, you know, go off and have fun. And, you know, and we've got a really, you know, we tend to have a lot of events at Fibber McGee's on Parnell Street, and they're fantastic. They're a great venue. You know, we love them, they love us. It's a great, great partnership. One of the things we felt that in the last year in particular was that we wanted to be more visible in the community. And it's one thing to go to Pride once a year and be seen by everybody. So one of the things we decided to do that on alternate months to our club night, which is a men-only event, we would go out in our gear to Panty Bar and to the George and to Neelan, so that everybody could see us in our gear and see that we're part of this big, bigger community. And those nights I absolutely love, because the reception we get from girls, from guys, you know, that's really, really great to see, because people kind of going, we didn't realize there was a leather community in Ireland. We're like, well, we've been here for quite a while.
Yeah.
But because we were always having our club nights, we weren't getting as much visibility.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a few weeks ago, we had an event that started in Panty Bar, and we went to the George, and we had an area reserved in the George. And the march of leather men and fetish guys from Panty Bar across Cable Street Bridge and down Dame Street was greeted with cheers on the street. Like, you know, 50 leather men just walking from one pub to another, but all of us in our gear, and the people of Dublin just were thrilled to see it. And if you think about it, like 5-6 years ago, I'm not entirely sure that cheering would have taken place. You know, our country has evolved quite a bit in the last, you know, few years. And the acceptance level of these kind of minority LGBT groups is becoming much more, as you said earlier, much more mainstream. Mm. We're becoming much more visible. And that can only be a good thing for us.
Definitely. Talk to me a little bit about IML.
Oh my God. So yeah, so International Mr. Leather is kind of probably one of the biggest leathermen festivals in the world. I mean, after Folsom, I know Folsom can attract up to 250,000 people to that district in San Francisco. International Mr. Leather is a competition of title holders from around the world, but particularly the US. And it's held in Chicago on the last weekend of May every year. This was the 38th year of it. So it started in 1979. And to get into IML, to be a contestant at IML, you have had to either have won a club title or a state title in the US or a national title as well.
Do we have titles here in Ireland?
We have titles here. So our club, we have three titles in our club to cover all the fetishes. So we have Mr. Rubber Ireland, and our current Mr. Rubber Ireland is Ronan. And then we have Mr. Leather Ireland for 2016, and that's Cahill. And then we have Mr. Geared Ireland, which is the club title, so that covers all of the fetishes, and that's Steve. So those are our current 2016 title holders. I was Mr. Geared Ireland in 2015, which allowed me to go to IML in 2016. So because I held the club title, I was able to go and represent Ireland for that in May. And I competed against 58 other people from around the world, 58 other guys, I should say. We were the biggest group since 2004. So we were a big, big class of men, 59 of us. And it was the most intense and crazy experience of my life.
Do tell.
It was kind of the build up to it. You know, you had to have an application and you had to have a summary, a biography, and you had to talk about your achievements and, you know, what you'd like to do with the title and all this. And you had to have like official photos done and all that. And then you had to, you know, you were told this pack, you were told, okay, you need to have 9 outfits for the weekend for official and staged things, and you're kind of going, what, 9 leather outfits? And I was like,
you're
okay,
never going to get that on the Ryanair flight.
Well, it wasn't Ryanair I flew, but I could tell you I carried 66 kilos.
Oh my gosh.
With me to Chicago, of boots and various different types of boots and various items of leather clothing. My mantra was accessorize and get lots of different accessories in different colors. So it was, I flew in on the Wednesday and then it began on the Thursday. So we had a full day of orientation on the Thursday. We got our contestant numbers. We got our IML medals. And then on the Friday, the contest actually began. And that began with interviews where you had an 8-minute interview with a panel of 9 judges. And, you know, there's a lot to answer, you know, when they ask you questions and you've got to like limit yourself into 8 minutes. You had official photo shoots. Then you had that night and in a theatre for about 2,000 people. We had the flag ceremony where we each carried out our country's flag while our national anthem played in front of everybody. That's when you're introduced to all of the people attending the weekend. And I think I had to have 2 outfits for that night. Then on the next day, which was the Saturday, we had our kind of the most nerve-wracking portion of the contest, which was what's called Pecs and Personality, and it's all about stage presence. This is where we had to do a musical number at the start. So you can imagine the choreography of 59 men, which probably none of us had any rhythm whatsoever. We had to go on stage.
How long were you given to like learn the choreography?
We were in the theater, I think, from about 2 in the afternoon, and we were on stage at 9 o'clock that night. So it was a long day. But the choreography of that was, well, it was easy enough, but it was just, the stage is quite big, so you need to know your entrances and exits and timings, and you know, 59 men around in their boots going around under the lights doesn't help. But Pecs and Personality, you have to show your physique, so your body, and you have to show your kind of your spontaneity on stage. So you get a random question based on your application while you're standing on stage in a pair of boots and a jockstrap in front of
under these hot lights
with 1,000 people in the room, over 1,000 people looking at you, and you've got to be spontaneous and answer a spontaneous question. And
what was the question you were given?
My God, my question was bizarre, because it was nothing in relation to my application, and I think the look of disgust on my face when it came out, I think, was photographed widely. I had a question of, so Connor, we believe that the following 3 sports are very famous in Ireland and popular in Ireland: hurling, Gaelic football, and rugby. It gets better. So if you could pick one of these 3 sports and pick one of the judges to be on your team, which sport would you pick and why? Which judge would you pick and why? What would you get them to wear, and what would your club rules be? So that was my question, and I had nothing about sport in my application.
Yeah.
So that was my spontaneous question to ask, and I was flabbergasted when I got it, but I think I recovered well.
I
brought camogie into it, and I concentrated on the one and only female judge we had. So,
oh, brilliant.
That got a kind of I didn't realize there were some Irish women in the audience, and I got a big cheer off them while I started talking about camogie.
The Irish, like, no matter where you go in the world, you're always gonna get like this really awesome welcome, because I don't know what it is about Ireland that just like everybody associates with, and they just love so much.
And actually the whole Irish contingent that were there got a big reception. You know, we were very well received there. Then on Sunday is the finals, and on Sunday the top 20 are announced. So out of the 59 men, 20 go forward to the finals, which is a whole extra kind of almost like mini competition on the night. And I was very lucky, I got into the top 20. I was in shock when it was announced, because if you look at the photos of me, I'm completely oblivious to the fact that my name was called out. And then we had to give, so the top 20 then had to give a 90-second speech on a topic of their choice, which was timed. And if you went over, your mic was cut off.
And can I just say, like, before you go into like the content of your speech, I heard it like when you posted it on Facebook. I listened to it and it was just so poignant and just so timely, because it came around the time of the Pulse nightclub shooting. Mm-hmm. So could you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The speech I had written about a month in advance, and to practice it, you know, in the hope that I would get into the top 20. And only two people had heard it before I left. Mm. And I was just, you know, just to gauge if they thought it was good. And so then the Pulse nightclub happened, and it was only about a week before. It happened a week after my speech. So my speech happened, and then the Pulse nightclub happened the week later. And that was, a lot of people spoke to me about that. But my speech was essentially about, in everybody looks at Ireland as being this amazing example of equality, but it was a very long and tough road. And so I spoke about the Fairview Park murder in the early 1980s, and just Declan Flynn's murder to me, and what happened out of it at a time when our community was illegal. And to go from that to full equality in my lifetime, in 32 years, just shows you how tough it has been, but also how resilient our community has been, but also how Ireland has evolved. And it was, but I wanted to highlight to the world, basically, and to the people at IML, that, you know, we can stand here on these stages and do all of these and make these speeches, but actions speak louder than words. And there are so many countries around the world where it is still illegal to be gay, and gay people are still being killed and oppressed just for being who they are. I had been to Tanzania in early May and had met with a group there. And when I heard what their lives were like, I realised how amazingly fortunate I was to be born in Ireland, and that I was able to live in a country that has full equality. So that was what my speech was about. And so it wasn't about leather, and it wasn't about, being what would happen if I was international Mr. Leather. I just really wanted to show that Ireland can evolve, and our community and the whole of the public can evolve with us. And that was what my speech was about. And I remember, I walked off the stage completely frazzled, because if there's one thing about being a lecturer when you're talking, is that you talk to people, and you see people in front of you and you talk to them. On stage at that Harris Theatre in 5,000 people, I saw nobody. The lights were so bright, and the stage and the outer area where this audience were sitting was so black, I projected into nothing. So that to me was a bit of a shocker. So I remember I walked off the stage thinking, oh my God, that was awful. And I completely was oblivious to people cheering and clapping, and then I was getting messages I'm still getting messages from people saying how it brought a tear to their eye and it made them remember the struggles, and that it was very poignant. And then a few weeks later then was the Pulse nightclub, and I got a lot of people commenting about my speech then. So for me, that was the pinnacle of my IML experience, that I was able to get into the top 20 and deliver that speech. And everything that came afterwards, I think half an hour later, I was back on stage wearing a jockstrap and chaps and a chest harness, waving. And then I had to go and put on all my full leather formals for the final announcement of the winner. And, you know, and the experiences I had in the backstage area and with all of my 59 or 58 brothers that were at IML with me. I mean, that's, we're a family now. You know, we have this amazing bond, and I can travel the world and see them. But that speech that I delivered was to me the most important thing that I did there. And I know I did the podcasts for Gay Community News, and they were quite popular. But my speech was my. I would have been very disappointed if I wasn't able to deliver that speech. So I was very, very grateful.
And is it still on YouTube? Can people still see it?
Yeah, it's on my Facebook page. And if you go to the IML 2016 page on YouTube, I think every single speech, all of the 20 speeches are there. All of the PECS and personality questions are there. So if people want to go and see that GA question, they can. No problem. but for me, IML it was an amazing experience. It was crazy, absolutely crazy. I was getting about 4 hours sleep a night. I was eating, surviving on protein bars and apples and coffee and vitamin B tablets. And it was like nothing I had ever experienced. And if that's what being a supermodel or being famous is, I don't want it. No way on earth. It was fine for 5 days, but it was pretty crazy. And, you know, we were very fortunate with Geared as well that actually one of our committee members, John, was actually one of the judges at IML as well this year. So we had this kind of like double impact where one of the 9 judges was our secretary of the club and then I was participating. And then last year, Kevin Murphy, he took part at IML and he came second. So yeah, it was a huge, big thing. And then hopefully next year, Cahill, who's our current Mr. Leather Ireland, hopefully he'll go over too. It's an expensive undertaking. But from my conversations with him, I think he's very keen to go and take part and to experience it. So it's a way for our club to get a lot of exposure and for us to be seen. And as you said, the Irish are very popular wherever we go. So, capitalize on that popularity whenever we can.
I'm really surprised that this isn't something that like Discovered Ireland hasn't like cashed in on the way they do with like the Rose of Tralee. Because you guys are like such great ambassadors for your community and such great ambassadors for like Ireland in general.
Well,
like,
I hope so. I mean, it would be funny if Discover Ireland decided to include us as part of their advertising for Ireland. Come and meet the Leathermen of Ireland. It would be very funny. But where, you know, we do understand the need to, you know, strengthen our own community here in the country, okay, but also then to build links with, especially with our European fellow European clubs, because they come over to us to our events, and you know, we strengthen and we gain new knowledge and we strengthen our relationships, and that's a really like fantastic thing for us as a club to kind of know that we've also got the support from the international community. And while quite often, you know, we sit in our committee meetings and we're kind of going, oh my God, we need to get our numbers up and we need more people, you know. And I think when we started, we might have had 50 or 60 guys at the start. We used to be delighted with 50 or 60 guys. And now we're kind of going, oh, yeah, we had like 190 guys at our January event. And you're kind of going, oh yeah, that's kind of a good number, you know. So knowing that we can get that many people in the country to come to our events, it shows that hard work does pay off. And while sometimes I do feel as if I'm like a broken record on Facebook going, oh, please come to our events and we're doing this month, it does actually get the message out, you know.
Yeah. So I think that's about time. But before we go, you have an announcement to make.
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
So tell us what's happening.
So Geared, because of our kind of continued expansion at Geared, we wanted to emulate some of the other bigger events around Europe and around the world. And so we always hold our title holder competition at the end of January. And last year it was very popular. And this year we decided, okay, let's take it one step further. And so basically we are going to be holding on the last weekend of January, from the 27th to the 29th of January, Leather Pride Dublin, the very first one.
Yay.
And we're going to be holding a series of events over the weekend. We have a website and a Facebook page, leatherpridedublin.ie. And we're going to have some kind of just socializing events, which are free at different locations. We're going to have a VIP package, which will include a sequence of events like a leather dinner and leather cocktails and a whiskey tour and leather afternoon tea, which sounds hilarious. But also include things like LGBT history talks and leather history talks from an Irish perspective. We will have our big title holder contest as well on the Saturday night, and for that we're opening it up to the whole community. So guys and girls can come along to that as long as they're in fetish gear. So if you want to come, you put on your leather, put on...
will bring my harness.
There you go. You'll be perfect. So, you know, and you know, we're going to be the Nivnok crowd in Dublin. That's the pansexual fetish group. You know, they're going to be advertising it for us as well, you know, to get some more of their involved in it. And, you know, we hope that the whole weekend will be well attended both nationally and internationally. So it's a big step for us because it's a lot of organizing and, you know, we're going to have to, you know, do a lot of advertising and things like that. But we really hope it's going to be a big success and hopefully it'll then become an annual event because, you know, Leather Pride Amsterdam, Leather Pride in Antwerp, you've got Leather Prides all across the US. And, you know, London has Full Fetish Week. So I know we can't compete with that. But, you know, there's a core group of us here and we're committed to kind of getting this going. So we hope that January will be a big success and that it will broaden people's horizons in Dublin.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. Men of Ireland, men of Europe, get yourselves down to one of the Geared Nights. You can follow them on Facebook. What's the Facebook?
Geared Ireland.
Just Geared Ireland.
Geared Ireland. Okay. And our website is www.gearedireland.com. And we also have a Twitter handle as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming in.
I'm delighted. Thank you very much.
Hey guys, it's me again. I just wanted to say thanks to Dr. Connor for coming in and talking to us about leather community stuff. And thank you guys so much for listening. This is our very first Our Sexual History podcast. If you want to hear more from me, you can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on headstuff.org. We're also looking for suggestions for future shows. So if you're a historian or if you have like a history background, you have some cool sexual history facts for us, please get in contact with us at sexhistory@headstuff.org. As some of you may know, I also have my other project, my sort of main work is running sexshoppa.ie, Ireland's first health and design focused sex shop. So if you need to get yourself some awesome body safe toys, come on down to sexshoppa.ie. Our amazing artwork was done by Sheena Flynn and our music was done by Shane O'Sullivan. See you next month, guys.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.